Chapter 15. It was just past midnight when Copkind unlocked the front door to his shop and invited Sarah in.
David, I've had a wonderful time. I'm going to get my bike and go. Guess I won't offer you a nightcap. Some other time.
Really? They entered his foyer. The little bell rang, and Yoshi advanced through the curtain yawning and snarling.
Really?
Yes, really.
What is it with that cat?
David stooped and scooped the basketball-sized mound of fur, causing Sarah to involuntarily cringe as she envisioned the fur deposit on his shirt.
He's got some kind of sinus deviation that makes him do that.
The vet says he's fine, and it would cost too much to correct. Sarah ducked into the washroom and quickly changed back into her curvy-fit blue jeans, leather boots, and jacket, neatly packing her party dress and accoutrements in the leather backpack. Her badge and gun went in the tank bag. As Copkind held the alley door open for her, she leaned over and kissed him on the cheek.
Call me.
She used the ride home to sort out her feelings. He was cute. And he was smart. And he had nothing to do with police work, an enormous plus. But she'd just met him, and she was in the middle of an investigation. Sarah had been single since the disastrous affair with Maddie Dreyfus, a vice cop. When IA busted Dreyfus, they took a good long look at her as well. Maddie couldn't stand the heat. He ate his gun, which had left a bad taste in her mouth, as if they were telepathically linked. She sensed none of the brooding fury in Copkind that she found in most cops. Even the best, like Joe Siri, nursed a secret kernel of rage that could explode at any time. Police work was not therapy. Even though it provided therapy, most cops refused to take advantage of the benefit. They just wouldn't admit they had a problem.
Wouldn't be manly.
Not Sarah. She knew she had a problem. Her problem was convincing a doctor. And how could she do that? If she went to see some shrink and said, "Look, doc, I got a sentient ancient weapon living on my wrist," they would have her fitted for a rubber room. It was past one by the time she got home. Schmendrick scolded her as she let herself in her door. She wondered if Yoshi were a boy or a girl.
"Schmendrick," she said, clutching the cat.
"How would you feel about double dating?" Sarah woke with sun streaming in through the windows. She glanced at the bedside clock. 11:30. Sunday. No day of rest for her, but she'd promised herself a ride before she took another look at the evidence. Her father had had an old cop Harley, and at least once a year, until he died, he'd take her up the Hudson to Brandywine. Sarah stretched, showered, spooned down a yogurt and a banana. She phoned the 52nd precinct in the Bronx and connected with a desk sergeant named Brian, whom she'd met when she first moved in.
"Danny boy, it's Pezzini. Why aren't you at morning mass, darling?"
"Ha ha. Listen. Do me a favor. Find out who owns my building, will you?" She gave him the address.
"Sure, and I'll do that, darling. When you gonna buy the Sarge a cuppa?"
"Soon, Sarge, soon.
And thanks."
Always, the debate, what to wear. It wasn't a matter of style, it was a matter of comfort versus safety. It was hot in the city. But leather was undeniably the best defense against road rash. In the end, she compromised, as she always did. Bootcut Levi's, leather boots, jacket, and gloves. And of course the full-face RI. She rolled up the medical center garage ramp at 12:25 and headed south. It was Sunday, when even Manhattan's ferocious traffic rested. She zipped across the moderately crowded streets and soon reached the Henry Hudson Parkway. It was a sunny day in the high 60s. Sarah was perfectly comfortable leaning into the pocket behind the Yamaha's minuscule cowl. When trucks passed her going the other way, she lay down on her tank bag, although no debris could penetrate the RI. She was past Yonkers when she noticed the close-spaced twin gleam in her rear views. Another bike. Like dogs marking their territory, bikers were instantly aware of other bikes. She glanced down. She'd been cruising at 80. She throttled back, waited for the other bike to catch up. She wanted to know what it was. The bike zipped around an Amblin Camry and pulled next to her. It was the beige and silver Hayabusa from the station. Sarah downshifted, opened the throttle and jerked back on the bars. The ferociously fast RZ1 obediently reared up on its rear wheel as she wheelied away at 100 per. The Hayabusa lagged a moment due more to the rider's surprise than any lack of ability. She dove into a cluster of slow-moving minivans, weaving from lane to lane, space to space, until she was convinced she'd buried the Hayabusa. Her pursuer emerged almost immediately behind her.
"You want to play?" Sarah thought.
"Fine. Let's play. Worst that can happen, I'll crash. The Witchblade will protect me."
"What will protect you, new boy?" She downshifted and accelerated to 140 miles an hour. At this speed, she had to concentrate far ahead on the four-lane expressway, looking for any potential obstacle. Fortunately, her reflexes were up to the task. Although she knew the Hayabusa could easily match her top speed, its rider had to outweigh her by approximately 100 pounds, which would slow him down somewhat. Wind whistling through the helmet sounded like a million police sirens in pursuit. The sound had never bothered her. Her father had taught her police sirens were the truest signs of civilization. Road signs and exits whisked by in a heartbeat. Trevor Mansion. Hastings on Hudson. They zipped through traffic like fireflies among armadillos, not slowing down until Sarah crested a rise just past Dobbs Ferry and saw traffic stopped a half mile ahead, due to an accident. The first exit led to Treverton and St. Benedict's Retreat, a cloistered order of the Benedictine Brotherhood. Sarah zipped off and took the left turn toward the river and the retreat. The Hayabusa was right behind her. The entrance to the retreat went through a wrought iron gate, open for Sunday, between brick pillars. The blacktop road wound between a hardwood forest until it came to the retreat, a three-story red brick Reformation structure with steeply raked green copper roofs, a wide turnaround occupied by an old Cadillac and a heating/air conditioning van, and a turn-off into a walled alcove overlooking the Hudson. Sarah used the handicapped ramp to zip up onto the alcove. She kicked out her stand, semaphored her legs off the bike, and was taking off her helmet when the Hayabusa drove in beside her. The guy was big, all right. When he got off the bike, he towered over Sarah. A moment later he removed his full face shield and it was the handsome black cop from the press conference. There was a slight oriental tilt to his eyes, as if there might be some Japanese in his family blood. He stuck out his hand. "Hey, how are ya, Derek Sharp? I'm the gang guy they hired from Hawaii." Sarah took his hand, looking up into warm brown eyes. "Pezzini, but you know that. You left Hawaii to take a job in New York? Why, man, I have always wanted to be in New York. This is the center of the world. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. Macadamia nuts and Don Ho get old after a while. How many reasons do you want? Were you following me?" Sharp held his string-backed gloved hands up and waggled his fingers. "No, ma'am. But when I saw you zipping in and out of traffic up ahead, I thought I'd better take a look. As a copper? Or a biker?" Sharp grinned. "Both. Anyway, I've heard a lot about you. I'm glad it's you. How you coming with the samurai killings?" Sarah rolled her eyes. "I should have known. We're looking for a killer who's collecting rare swords." Sharp went over to the brick abutment and leaned on it, gazing down at the slowly trolling blue Hudson, a scattering of small pleasure craft, a barge working against the current, nudged along by a tug. The New Jersey Palisades were dense with growth, gleaming in the afternoon sun. It was a perfect day. "Really? What kind? I know a little bit about swords." The hair on the back of Sarah's neck tingled. She didn't believe in coincidence. "How is it you know a little bit about swords, Derek Sharp?" "I was midshipman on the USS Teddy Roosevelt, an aircraft carrier in the Pacific during the 90s. We made some ports of call in Japan, where I was privileged to study Kendo and Iaido with some of the masters." "Iaido? The art of drawing the blade, striking the target, and returning the blade to the scabbard all in one smooth motion. Really, a perfectly useless skill." "Not quite," Sarah thought. Jerky video image of the swordsman rising like a cobra to lop off Bachman's head. As she said, she didn't believe in coincidence. But this guy was a cop. And in the wake of 9/11, the department was going over every new recruit with a Geiger counter up the ass. Just because Sharp was into swords didn't mean he was the samurai killer. "And you have a Japanese bike," she said. "Two, actually. Got a Shadow 1100 for cruising. My favorite movie is The Seven Samurai. I like sushi. I like sumo." "What is sumo, anyway, but sushi with larger pieces of meat?" Sarah laughed. Sharp flashed a Steinway smile. "Too bad you couldn't have been with me last night. I had all the big-shot sword collectors in Manhattan, in one room." "Really? Where was that?" She told him about Bratton's party. Sharp listened intently. He seemed even more interested when she mentioned Adrian Hecht. "I'm investigating a series of vandalisms down at his new site, near Ground Zero. He wants to give me the grand tour." "What kind of vandalisms?" "The kind that verge on sabotage. Cables nearly cut in two. Sand in gas tanks. Some kind of jive-ass third world up against the wall motherfucker all-purpose protest. You know, Down with capitalism, Hecht is an exploiter of the masses and a despoiler of the environment, etc., etc. Sharp's voice had a performer's sing-song quality. Sarah was mesmerized. The anti-global village gang? Exactly. Seems to me the public has less tolerance for this sort of thing in the wake of 9/11. Sharp sighed and rested his weight on his elbows as he leaned over the Hudson. Sarah noticed his incredible biceps. He wore a sleeveless safari vest over a muscle shirt. These people are true believers. They are immune to reason, or public sentiment. Yet, they do have a lot in common with the Taliban. On the other hand, Hecht has powerful enemies who would like to see him fail. It's possible one of them is using this bunch as a cover, to cause mischief. You got evidence, or is this a hunch? Sharp peered into the distance, as if he'd spied a hawk above Jersey. You know Bob Kosk? Amalgamated Truck Drivers of America. Twice indicted, never convicted. Rico's perennial runner-up of the year. Last year the Teamsters gave 50 grand to Pete, People for the Ethical Treatment of the Environment. Well, for Pete's sake. Aha, makes you wonder. So I'm down there at odd moments, looking for saboteurs. Sarah looked Sharp up and down. Physically, he was the exact opposite of most New York gang members, who were small and feral. Rotsarok. You said you know a little about swords. Have you heard of Muramasa? Sharp's face darkened. Of course. The so-called evil blades. In Japanese mythology, restless demons haunt the earth. Muramasa's blades were legendary for being associated with them. The motives would vary from one legend to the next, but these demons would usually end up inhabiting some poor goober to work their evil mojos on the living. Like some form of possession? So the stories go. A few years ago, Sarah would have dismissed Sharp's comments as nutwork. Not now. She had seen too much. She was acutely aware that aliens slash demons slash spirits could walk the earth. One walked her. Sharp clapped his hands and whirled, abruptly giddy. But we are in America, detective? You're an educated woman. Surely you don't believe in such superstitious nonsense. No, of course not. They both laughed. Virtually every surviving Muramasa is accounted for. I think there are in the neighborhood of 36, including long and short swords, all from the later period, not the original Muramasa, the one who made the bloodthirsty blades. From time to time rumors surface of a long-lost masterpiece, but there hasn't been an important discovery since 95, when the last Masamune was discovered. A busload of tourists had disgorged behind them and they found themselves surrounded by seasoned citizens with cameras, some of whom clucked at the bikes. One more thing, Sharp said. Ever think that the thefts may just be a dodge to cover up the murder? I'm thinking of Chalmers. Big shot like that has enemies. If the killer gets you wasting your time looking for some kind of samurai ghost, so much the better. Aha. Do me a favor? What? See what you can find out about the Brooklyn Romeros, and their leader, Jorge Candido. Sharp pulled out a small spiral pad and made some notes. I'm on it like white on rice. Come on, Sarah said. Let's get out of here before someone turns us into the monks for parking violations. They rode into Reedsburg, found seats at a sidewalk cafe beneath a Bacardi awning at a round steel table and ordered cafe lattes. Antique hounds from Long Island rummaged down the busy little main street, SUVs parked diagonally in orderly ranks. So, Sarah, word is you're a freak magnet. I attracted you, didn't I? Sharp displayed his teeth, like a flashing smile sign. Sarah liked having him around. He sent off no predatory vibes. He made her feel safe. Touché, he said. How far does your fascination with the Japanese go, Sharpsy? Do you work out? I have a few black belts. I'll bet you have. Maybe you'll take a look at the tape. I'd like to hear your opinion. What tape? Sarah told him about the Bachman video. Sure, Sharp said, glancing at his watch. Aseko. I'd be glad to. I have to head back. My partner's expecting me to make the salad. Who's your partner? Just a guy I know works on Wall Street. He's still shaky in the morning. Sarah was impressed, with both Sharp and the powers that be. It was one thing to see a gay cop on some television drama. It was another to have an openly gay cop functioning in a real New York precinct. Of course they did cover the village. And Sharp was hardly a screaming queen. He would fool many women. They split the tab and agreed not to race each other back into the city. They rode together into central Manhattan, where Sarah finally peeled down Broadway, with a wave and a wiggle of the Yamaha's pert rear.